Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna. Text 14. Sa eva sva prakritya idam shrishtva agre triguna atmakam tat anu tvam hi apravishta pravishta Iva Bhavyase Sa Eva Sva Prakrityedam Shristvarge Trigunatmakam Tad Anutvam Hyapravrista Pravista Eva Bhavyase Sa Eva Sva Prakritye Dham Shristvarge Trigunatmakam Tadanu Tvam Hyapravrista Apravista Pravishta Eva Bhavyase Sa Eva Sva Prakritye Dham Shristva Gre Trigunatmakam Tadanu Tvam Hya Pravishta Apravishta Pravishta Eva Bhavyase Se Esa Sva Prakritye Dham Shristva Gre Trigunatmakam Tadanu Tvam Hi Apravishta Pravishta Eva Bhavyase
Sa Eva Sva
Prakritye Dham
Shrisva Gre Trigunatmakam
Tadanu Tvam Hi Apravishta
Pravishta Eva
Bhavyase
Sa Eva Sva
Prakritye Dham
Shristva Gre Trigunatmakam
Tadanu Tvam Hi Apravishta
Pravishta Eva Bhavyase
Sa Eva Sva Prakritye Dham Shrisva Gre Trigunatmakam Tadanu Tvam Hi Apravishta Pravishta Eva Bhavyase Ladies? Sa Eva Sva Prakritye Dham Shrisva Gre Trigunatmakam
Pranitam hi apravishta. Pravishta eva bhavyase. Sa.
He.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eva. Indeed. Swaprakritya. By your personal energy. Maya Dakshena. Prakriti. Suyate. Sacharacharam. Idam. This material world. Shristva. After creating. Agre. In the beginning. Triguna Atmakam. Made of the three modes of energy. Sattva, Rajas, Tamo, Guna. Tat Anu, thereafter, Tvam, your lordship. He, indeed. Apravishta, although you did not enter. Pravishta eva, you appear to have entered. Bhavyase, are so understood. Translation. My Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created this material world by his personal external energy. After the creation of this world of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, you appear to have entered it, although in fact you have not. Please repeat. My Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created this material world by his personal external energy. After the creation of this world of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, you appear to have entered it, although in fact you have not. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.4, the Supreme Personality of Godhead clearly explains, Bhumir apo nalo vayu kam mano buddhir evacha ahankara itiyam me bina prakritir ashtada. This material world of three modes of nature, sattvagun, rajogun, and tamogun, is a composition of earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all of which are energies coming from Krishna. Yet Krishna, being always transcendental, is aloof from this material world. Those who are not in pure knowledge think that Krishna is a product of matter, and that his body is material like ours. Avajanante mam mudha. In fact, however, Krishna is always aloof from this material world. In the Vedic literature, we find the creation described in relationship to Mahavishnu. As stated in the Brahma Sanhita 5:35, Ekopyasaurachaitum jagadandakotim yachchakti asti jagadandachayayadanta andantarasta paramanuchayantarastam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, the original personality of Godhead. By his partial plenary expansion as Mahavishnu, he enters into material nature. Then he enters every universe as Garbhodakshai Vishnu, and he enters all the elements, including every atom of matter, as Kshirodakshai Vishnu. Such manifestations of cosmic creation are innumerable, both in the universes and in the individual atoms. Govinda is partially exhibited as Antaryami, the Supersoul, who enters this material world, Andantarasta, and who is also within the atom. The Brahma Samhita 5:48 further says, Yasyai tanish vasita kalam atavalambya jivanti loma vilaja jagadandaknata Vishnur mahan saiva yasya kala vishesho Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. This verse describes Mahavishnu as a plenary expansion of Krishna. Mahavishnu lies on the causal ocean, and when he exhales, millions of brahmandas, or universes, come from the pores of his body. Then, when Mahavishnu inhales, all these brahmandas disappear. Thus, the millions of brahmandas controlled by the Brahmas and other demigods come and go in this material world through the breathing of Mahavishnu. Foolish persons think that when Krishna appears as the son of Vasudeva, he is limited like an ordinary child. But Vasudeva was aware that although the Lord had appeared as his son, the Lord had not entered Devaki's womb and then come out. Rather, the Lord was always there. The Supreme Lord is all-pervading, present within and without. Pravishta eva bhavyase. He only seemed to have entered the womb of Devaki and to have now appeared as Vasudeva's child. The expression of this knowledge by Vasudeva indicates that Vasudeva knew how these events took place. Vasudeva was certainly a devotee of the Lord, in full knowledge. And we must learn from devotees like him. The Bhagavad Gita 4:34 therefore recommends tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshyantite jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Vasudev begot the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet he was in full knowledge of how the Supreme Lord appears and disappears. He was therefore Tattvadarshi, a seer of the truth, because he personally saw how the Supreme Absolute Truth appeared as his son. Vasudeva was not in ignorance, thinking that because the Supreme God had appeared as his son, the Lord had become limited. The Lord is unlimitedly existing and all-pervading, inside and outside. Thus, there is no question of his appearance or disappearance. Translation again. My Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created this material world by his personal external energy. After the creation of this world of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, you appear to have entered it, although in fact you have not. Vasudev, the apparent father of Krishna, is offering the second of his prayers to the Lord, who apparently had come from the womb of Devaki. Srimad Bhagavatam, the very name Srimad Bhagavatam means the beautiful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is filled with descriptions of the Lord's pastimes with his devotees, and the reciprocation between the Lord and his devotees, and the glorification of the Lord by his devotees in love. Vasudev sets the ideal example for us. He was full of affection for Krishna as his son, but at the same time he was fully aware of his Lord's omnipotency and the ways of his Lord's apparent appearance and activities. And such awareness of the Lord's greatness increased his appreciation and affection for the Lord. The same is true even of the residents of Vrindavan. When they see Krishna exhibit his great powers, their appreciation and affection for him increases. When after Krishna performs some wonderful feat, the demigods from the higher planets descend into Vraja and offer prayers to Krishna and shower him with flowers, their appreciation and love for Krishna increases. And therefore devotees take pleasure in describing the glories of the Lord in all of his different features. These Prakrita Sahajiyas, who take things cheaply, do not like to discuss the greatness of the Lord. They just want to discuss the pastimes of the Lord with the residents of Vrindavan, and in particular with the gopis. But real love for Krishna means that one loves him in every feature, in all of his activities, and takes pleasure in glorifying him in every respect. So even for one who has a direct relationship, like Vasudev, who has a relationship in Vatsalya Rasa as a parent of Krishna, but he also takes pleasure in glorifying the Lord's greatness. And we should too. Such a taste for glorifying the Lord develops as the heart becomes purified by chanting and hearing. As stated in the second chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana, that by hearing talks about Krishna, one becomes pious. Or hearing talks about Krishna is itself a pious activity that makes one pious. Hridantastiyo Yabhadrani Virunati Saritsatam. And when the truthful devotee engages in hearing about the Lord within the heart of the devotee purifies the devotee of all inauspicious things that trouble the heart. He purifies the heart of ignorance, avidya, of unwanted thoughts and desires and behavior, anartha, of doubts. He cleanses the heart of the devotee. And when the devotee's heart is thus cleansed, the devotee takes pleasure in glorifying the Lord. Generally, in the beginning stages of devotional service, we are still very much contaminated and affected by the desire to want to be the center. Or, in more plain language, to want to be in the position of God Himself. So we do not take pleasure in glorifying the Lord so much, or hearing the glories of the Lord, but we take pleasure if people glorify us, if people talk about us in a favorable way. Even if people talk about us in an unfavorable way, we are very interested to know what they said. In other words, we are still focused very intently on ourselves, in terms of our bodies and minds. So if there is some discussion of the greatness of the Lord, we are not so interested. We're more interested in a discussion of our good qualities. And even if there is some criticism of the Lord, it doesn't affect us so much. But if there's criticism of us, it affects us. So, in the beginning, as a matter of routine duty, we spend time chanting and hearing the holy names and pastimes and qualities and glories of the Lord. And that cleanses the heart, Chaito Darpano Marginam, with the Lord's help. Just by the mechanical process of chanting and hearing, without the sincere desire to purify the heart, and without the Lord's help in reciprocation, we cannot purify the heart. We may chant externally and assume a semblance of hearing, but the real purification takes place when we want to be purified, when we don't want to continue in the material bodily conception of life, even in the garb of devotees. We have to sincerely pray to the Lord and the superior Vaishnavas to purify us and free us from these egoistic, false egoistic conceptions that are binding us to the material world and that result in our having a false taste for talks about ourselves and rob us or deprive us of the real taste, the real nectar of Krishna Katha. So the devotee loves the Lord, and he loves to glorify the Lord in every respect. All of our greatest acharyas, very high rasic bhaktas, have written commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam from the beginning to the end. They take pleasure in glorifying the Lord not only in Vrindavan or not only in his pastimes with the gopis, but in all of his features. And in fact, we are meant to progress in the study of Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning of the first canto, gradually through the subsequent cantos, and ultimately to the 10th canto and beyond, all the way to the last verse of the 12th canto. And for a devotee, all of these topics are purifying, all of these topics are edifying, and all of these topics are enlivening. And the devotee wants to chant and chant and chant and hear and hear and hear without stopping, without any end, without any gap in between, just chanting and hearing, chanting and hearing. And when one actually does have faith and attraction, one can appreciate the human-like pastimes of the Lord described in the 10th canto. Otherwise, one will not appreciate the unique quality of Krishna's mercy, that although he is the Lord of all the lords of the universe, he becomes submissive to the pure love of his devotees, and plays with them just like an ordinary child. So that faith is required, and that faith develops by hearing from tattvadarshis, from devotees who have seen the truth. By hearing from tattvadarshis, one can get the proper understanding and develop the proper attitude. Otherwise, one can have knowledge of the scriptures in terms of the words. One could repeat the words in Sanskrit. One could translate the Sanskrit into English or any other language, but not have the proper mood of devotion. And therefore, it is from a devotee who by definition has the mood of devotion that we should hear such topics. Srila Prabhupada has related a very nice story from the Puranic literature. about a Brahmin and a shoemaker or cobbler. One time, the great sage Narada, Devarshi Narada, was on his way to meet Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. Devarshi Narada has the freedom to travel anywhere in the material and spiritual worlds. And so he was en route to Vaikuntha to meet Lord Narayan. And on the way, he passed a Brahmin and when the Brahmin learned that Narada was to meet the Lord, he requested him to ask the Lord how many more births he had left in the material world when he would be liberated. And a little further, there's a big banyan tree. Under the banyan tree was a very humble cobbler, shoemaker. Cobblers or shoemakers are considered like the second lowest class in terms of occupation, because they deal with leather. But he was a devotee. He was born in that caste and he did that work, but he was a devotee. He also asked Narada that when you meet the Lord, please, if you get the chance, ask him about me, how many more births I will have in this world before he calls me. So Narada went, and in the course of his exchange with the Lord, he mentioned the Brahmin and the cobbler. For the Brahmin, the Lord said he will still have to take many, many births. And for the cobbler, he said this will be his last birth. At the end of this life, he will come to me. Narada thought quite intelligently that when he gives these answers, the recipients of the information may have some doubt whether Narada actually had seen the Lord, or whether he was just bluffing. So he asked the Lord, if they ask me what I saw when I met you, what you were doing when I met you, what should I answer? And the Lord replied, you can tell them that I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. So Narada returned and the Brahmin was very eager to know, did you meet the Lord? Yes. What did he say? He said, you have many more births to take. And the Brahmin, who was affected by false ego and pride, replied, nonsense. I don't believe you even met Lord Narayan. You know, I am a Brahmin, I have so much knowledge, I have so many good qualities and practices. I don't believe that I still have many breaths to take. I don't believe you have met the Lord. This is all bogus. And in that way, he actually committed offenses. And when Narada met the cobbler, the Brahmin said, if you actually saw the Lord, what was he doing? And then he gave the answer. He was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Then he really got agitated and said, this is nonsense. I don't believe you. Then he went to the cobbler, and the same exchange took place. Did you meet the Lord? Yes. What did he say? He said, this will be your last birth at the end of this life. You will come to him. Oh, the Lord is so merciful. I'm so unqualified, but still, the Lord, out of his causeless mercy, is accepting me. And then he asked, what was the Lord doing when you met him? He said he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler's ecstasy increased. Said, oh, my Lord is so wonderful. Only he could thread an elephant through the eye of a needle. My Lord is so great. Then Narada asked him, do you believe it, that the Lord was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle? How is it possible? And then he said, the Lord is so great that he can put a huge banyan tree into a tiny seed. So if he can put a whole banyan tree, huge banyan tree, banyan trees are very special trees. They're also very sacred trees. The roots grow down, from the branches, roots grow down into the ground. So the tree can keep expanding unlimitedly, and it keeps sinking more roots into the ground so it can get water and nutrients. And there are banyan trees that are like forests. One tree itself is like a forest. So he said, if the Lord can put a huge banyan tree within a tiny seed, then certainly he can thread an elephant through the eye of a needle. So again, we come to the point of humility. The basic Vaishnava quality is humility, which allows one to appreciate the Lord fully, as well as the devotees who are associated with him. The Brahmin, on the other hand, exhibited the mundane qualities that we all have in the material world, of pride and false ego and skepticism. Of course, skepticism is not wrong in and of itself. Skepticism is also a function of intelligence. Doubt is also a function of intelligence. But it should be applied properly. It, When we come to the stage of acceptance of the Lord and His words, then we should not be skeptical any longer. But we should accept the Lord's words or authorized statements about the Lord as they are. In the very early days of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that the moon was created from the churning of the ocean of milk. This refers to the pastime described in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In any case, one of the devotees, Jadarani Dasi, could not understand. She just could not understand how it was possible, what it even meant. So Srila Prabhupada replied, just repeat what I have said. The moon is churned from the ocean of milk. So she repeated it. The moon is churned from the ocean of milk. Then he said, repeat it again. The moon is churned from the ocean of milk. And then again, repeat it. The moon is churned from the ocean of milk. And then he asked, now do you understand? And she said, yes, the moon is churned from the ocean of milk. So, if we don't understand something, of course we can ask questions for clarification. That's also part of the process. But part of the process is just repeated hearing. And recitation of what we have heard. Repetition is necessary for understanding. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, it is not enough to say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in one purport. But we will say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every purport. Because repetition is necessary for understanding. And therefore, we hear repeatedly, and we also repeat what we have heard again and again. And that purifies our hearts and clarifies our understanding. Speaking about Krishna, repeating what we have heard, speaking about Krishna means repeating what we have heard, is very powerful. We heard how potent hearing Krishna Katha is. Srinvata Sva Katha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Kridyanti Asti Tohi Hiyabhadrani Vidunoti Saritsatam. But repeating what we have heard is even more powerful. If we have heard properly and repeat properly without speculation or mundane compromise. But if we repeat the message as it is very powerful. And therefore Srila Prabhupada said that giving Srimad Bhagavatam class for a half hour is equal to reading Srimad Bhagavatam for 3 hours. Because repeating what we have heard or read is so powerful and purifying. And then when our heart is actually cleansed, it's a gradual process, but we actually feel relish when we chant and hear. We take pleasure when we chant and hear, and then we want to do more and more without limit or cessation. And to develop that mood of humility, we must render service, humble service, menial service. And therefore the process of receiving knowledge from a tattvadarshi is not just hearing from him. Of course, hearing is the beginning. No doubt it all begins from hearing. But tadvidi pranipattena pariprashnena sevaya. Pranipat means to surrender. One must receive the knowledge in the mood of surrender. And pariprashnena, one should inquire. If one is actually interested, he will naturally have questions. Like if someone told you that I've hidden $1 million for you in your backyard, you would have questions. Well, where in my backyard? Oh, in the corner. Well, which corner? You know, where in that corner? I mean, because you would be very eager to get that treasure, you would have a lot of questions to make sure that you did what was necessary to get it. So the Vedic literatures, the tattvadarshis, they are offering us the greatest treasure of Krishna and Krishna prema. So if we are actually eager to get that treasure, we'll have a lot of questions. How do I actually do this? You know, I don't want to make any mistakes or waste time. How do I actually do this? And you'll ask questions. Once Srila Prabhupada gave a talk in Bombay at the Birla House. The Birlas have been the wealthiest family in India. So many affluent people came to the talk and they listened very politely. And afterwards, Srila Prabhupada asked for questions and nobody had any questions. The program was such that after the talk, Srila Prabhupada had dinner with Mrs. Birla. And he commented that there were no questions. It meant they were not interested. Mrs. Birla, on the other hand, had many questions. And one of her questions, burning questions, was about her son. Although the Birla family were very traditional Vaishnavas and, you know, trained in Vedic culture, her son had become a little different. He was once I actually came to the Birla house, and he met me. I was coming to meet his mother, Gopi Kumari Birla, who was very, very pious, very sweet. And he greeted me, and he was wearing a short sleeve shirt. I mean, the whole house is just like, it's like a formal estate with many servants all dressed very formally, and all the members of the family as well. He greeted me wearing slacks and maybe a silk short-sleeved shirt covered with American flags. I mean, it was quite unexpected. But that's the way he was. And I developed a relationship with him. And when Tamal Krishna Goswami and I were raising funds in Bombay for the Vrindavan temple, because the construction of the Juhu project was stalled because of the land dispute, and then the difficulty in getting permission to build the temple. So we approached Ashok Birla, and we showed him the list of different parts of the project, and a price was ascribed to each part of the project. So the biggest item at the top of the list was the temple. And I don't remember now, but the figure was 3 lakhs or 5 lakhs, 300,000 or 500,000 rupees, which was a lot of money then. And he agreed. He agreed. And up until then, the most any Birla had given, even like the older generation, the four brothers, was 25,000. And I was friends with the Maheshwari family. Mrs. Maheshwari, Snehlata Maheshwari, was the daughter of L.N. Birla and the granddaughter of G.D. Birla. And her husband, M.P. Maheshwari, was quite a prominent industrialist in India as well. And she told me that the whole Birla family was astonished by Ashok Birla, that he could give such a big donation, which none of them could give. And even though he was unconventional by their standards, to say the least, he gave the donation, which none of these proper, sophisticated other Birlas could do. But at the time that that Prabhupada came to Birla House in Bombay, Mrs. Birla was very concerned about her son because he was so different, and she was, asking what she could do. Basically Srila Prabhupada said, it's like that. The parents might be like Aditi and Kashyapa, but they may give birth to Hiranyakasipu. Just to give the opposite example, Srila Prabhupada had a son whom he named Mathura Mohan, very beautiful name, Mathura Mohan Day. Mathura Mohan was very intelligent. He's extremely intelligent. But he was a little crooked. Although extremely intelligent, he became a communist. But he was so intelligent that when he met some of Prabhupada's disciples, he told them that my parents were like Aditi and Kasyapa, but I've become like Hiranyakasipu. And your parents, or maybe said father, my father was like Kasyapa Muni, and I became like Hiranyakasipu. And your parents are like Hiranyakasipus, but you've become like Prahlad. So sometimes it happens like that. And so Mrs. Birla was really concerned about her son at the time, and she confided in Srila Prabhupada about her anxiety. And Prabhupada gave that example that the parents may be good, but the child may come out bad. The parents may be bad, but the child might come out good. And we can't really control our children's destinies. We can give them good instruction, that's our duty. We can set the proper example, that's our duty. We can give them love and affection, it's our duty and it's natural. But they have their own lives to lead, they have their own destinies, and we can't really control the outcome of our efforts. And therefore the Bhagavad Gita says you have the right to perform your work, but you're not entitled to enjoy the fruits. So coming back to this point of inquisitiveness, when you're really interested in something, when you're really concerned about something, you ask questions. And after the program at Birla House, Srila Prabhupada, you know, there were no questions. Well, they don't seem to have been very interested. But Mrs. Birla had a lot of questions because she was really concerned about her son, and she was concerned about her spiritual life. And Srila Prabhupada answered so many of her questions after the program. So these elements, tadvidi pranipatena. Pranipat means to surrender, offer obeisances. Offer obeisances means surrender. It's a token of surrender. Pariprashnena, to inquire submissively. And sevaya, to render service. It's natural that if you get something from someone and you've benefited from what you've got, you'll feel grateful and you'll want to reciprocate. So you reciprocate by offering service. But one can also offer service to get something from the person. Of course, one shouldn't do it to get something material, but the same idea is there materially. The same example, say, Your father has left you a fortune in your backyard, but he didn't tell you where it is, but I know where it is. Oh, okay. Can you tell me? I can tell you, but I'm not ready to tell you. Oh, well, what can I do to get you to tell me? So let me give you a glass of cooling beverage, let me give you a nice meal, let me massage your feet, let me, you want to do things for the person to get him to do something for you. Happens all the time. If anyone, I mean, I'm not sure now, but that's been the culture traditionally in Oriental societies. When you go to a merchant's shop, please come sit down, have a drink, have some fruit, have some sweets. They receive you to create a very congenial atmosphere where you feel happy and relaxed and open to buying their goods. Even in Juhu, when Srila Prabhupada built the complex, there was a restaurant, Govinda's restaurant, which is one of the most successful restaurants in Bombay and is reputed to have excellent prasad. And we had an auditorium, or there is an auditorium that was meant to have cultural performances, and it does, but we're talking about the stage in time when Srila Prabhupada was building it, before it had actually opened. And Srila Prabhupada said he wanted all the top people of India and the world to come to the Juhu temple. And he said, if you receive them very nicely and give them nice prasad in Govinda's, and treat them to an excellent cultural presentation, they will do whatever you ask them. They will accept whatever you say. So this is part of the process. I've given some mundane examples because we can all relate to them. I mean, any materialistic person, which we all are in the beginning, can understand that if you want to get something, you'll be very, and you really want to get it, it's very valuable, you'll be very inquisitive. And to get the information required, you will do whatever it takes. Like sometimes children have treasure hunts, and you get a clue, you go to a particular place, and then there's it's all very mysterious and tricky with double meanings and different entertaining techniques. And then the next place, there's a piece of paper with another clue, some mysterious clue. Then you try to figure out what that means. You go to that place, there's a bit of trial and error, and then when you get it right, you get another piece of paper with another clue. And then at the end of it, you get the treasure. So Krishna consciousness is sort of like that. You don't you don't all of a sudden get the treasure. I mean, the treasure is revealed. In a way you do. But the treasure is revealed gradually. And in order to get further realization, you have to take steps. And then you get some more realization, then you take more steps and you get more realization. So you should be inquisitive. Like, you know, what's the next instruction? What's the next instruction? What's the next instruction? And you should be willing to work for it. You just can't sit tight and wait for the treasure to come to you. It doesn't work like that. You have to work. That's sevaya. Pranipat, surrender, which is based on faith, adoshraddha, pranipat, prashna, be very eager to understand what you have to do to get the treasure, $1 million, and sevya, be ready to do service, be ready to work to get it. And then you get that great treasure of Krishna and Krishna Prema. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes, Dharma Prabhu?
Oh, thank you for that advice. You told me a story where the devotees asked to repeat something. She was not complete understanding. It is by repetition a couple of times. And even though the example was, she was asked to repeat something that we wouldn't ordinarily understand through our common sense. And then also in the purport, it mentioned a couple of times how we should hear from the self-realized people in full knowledge. So I was kind of understand both the balance of both points being made. Could you explain a little more?
Yes. Just coming back to the content of the purport, which was not directly part of your question, but the basic idea is that the Lord seems to appear from the womb of Devaki, but he doesn't actually enter her womb, but he's already there, because he's already everywhere. So it seems contradictory. And when things seem contradictory in the context of Vedic knowledge, it can be because it is outside our standard logical Western way of understanding things. And therefore, to resolve the apparent contradictions, we may need help. And ask questions. And the answers can help us see that ultimately there's no contradiction. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita verse that Srila Prabhupada alludes to in the purport, Krishna says, I am everywhere. All things are in me. I am in everyone. But they are not in me. I mean, it sounds contradictory. And in Brahma Samhita, in another verse, Lord Krishna says that I am situated in my own abode, Goloka Vrindavan. But at the same time, I'm everywhere. So it seems contradictory. Now this contradiction, yes, by repeating, you can understand it. It makes sense. But by inquiring of someone who has knowledge, he can also explain it in a way that it makes sense. And Srila Prabhupada explained that when Krishna says, I am situated in my own abode, Goloka Vrindavan, that is Krishna in his original form, Govinda. But when he says that I am everywhere, that is Krishna as the super soul in his all-pervasive feature. So the same applies in the Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna says, I am everywhere, I am in all things, he's referring to his feature as Vishnu, or the super soul. But when he says, I am not there, he's referring to his original form of Govinda. So it's like that. You can get understanding through someone in knowledge. But you also get understanding by repeating. And the Lord is in your heart to help you. He also gives you intelligence. As far as hearing from a tattva darshi, of course, in terms of vidhi, tadvidhi, the truth, the knowledge, that is true, we should hear from a tattva darshi. But even the holy name should be received from a pure devotee. And one new person wrote Srila Prabhupada and inquired that, we are supposed to have, we're supposed to hear the holy name from a pure devotee, but I've never met you. I haven't heard it from you directly. I've just heard it from some of your followers. So what will the effect be? And Srila Prabhupada replied that they have heard it from me, and you have heard it from them. So you're hearing it from them is the same as you're hearing it from me. So if we hear from a tattva darshi, say that the explanation, as Srila Prabhupada has explained in so many cases, that the Lord does not actually enter the womb of Devaki or even the heart of Devaki, but he's always there. And if we repeat that, that knowledge is correct because we're repeating what we've heard from a tattva darshi. And by repeating and following, you become a tattva darshi. That you in turn become a tattva darshi. And this would, or like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Amar Agyai Guru Hai Tare Desh, Yare Deki Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh, you become a guru, but like how could I become a guru? I'm like just an ordinary fallen soul. But yare deke tari kaha Krishna upadesh, wherever you go, whomever you meet, you repeat the message of Krishna. So that repeating, we're back to the point of repeating. Now that doesn't mean that one should have that conception that one is a guru. If one has the conception that one is a guru, he's fallen. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says if one has that abhiman or conception or self-conceit that I'm a guru, he's actually a guru, which means a cow. So that type of thinking you know, I'm a guru, I'm like an instructor of Vaishnavas, I'm an authority for Vaishnavas. That type of thinking is fatal spiritually. So our position is that we are humble servants repeating what we've heard from the Tattva Darshi. And in our position, that's what we can do. And that is what our authorities have told us to do. So in submission to their command, in obedience to their order, we repeat as they have instructed. And people will get benefit. There was one incident. We consider the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam to be Sridhar Swami. He is most respected and revered. But there was a time before Sridhar Swami when people did not understand Srimad Bhagavatam in such a deep way. So when Sridhar Swami gave his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, people were confused. Is this the proper understanding? Because whenever there's something new, people are skeptical. It's natural. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a great innovator in ways. But people were doubtful. Is he really following Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Srila Prabhupada also, in order to present the same message, I mean, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was delivering the same message as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, giving the same process as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but adjusted in a way that his audience could understand and follow. Srila Prabhupada did the same thing. He took the same knowledge that he received from his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but he presented it in a way that his audience could understand and follow. Srila Prabhupada's servant, Hari Sori, you know, because at night Prabhupada would dictate his translation of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the disciples were always eager that he should have enough time and be freed from other engagements to translate. And they would measure how much he translated by the numbers on the dial of the dictaphone. So one morning, when Hari Sori, you know, came into the room to do the morning duties, you know, he saw the dictaphone and he saw that a lot of numbers had passed from the night before. So he remarked to Srila Prabhupada, "Oh, you did like, you know, so many numbers of translation last night. That's really wonderful." And Srila Prabhupada replied, "Oh, I can translate very quickly. But to make it understandable to you is is what is difficult, and that takes time. So these great acharyas who made radical, apparently radical adjustments, considering time, place, and circumstance, have done the work for us. The major work, I should say. They've done the major work for us. So then it becomes easier for us to repeat. If we had to repeat what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, it would be very difficult. Because first of all, we wouldn't have even understood what he said. And even if by some great mercy we were to understand what he said, if we were to repeat it in the same way in which he spoke it, no one else would understand. Even when he spoke it, people couldn't understand. Even his own disciples, even Srila Prabhupada said he couldn't understand everything his Guru Maharaj was saying. He was speaking on such a high platform. But he liked to hear his Guru Maharaj speak, even though he couldn't understand it all, but he liked to hear him speak. And that and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that that was his qualification. When Abhay Charan was recommended for initiation, both first and second at the same time, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied, "Yes, I will initiate him. He likes to hear." And as Srila Prabhupada said, you know, one who hears nicely, he will speak nicely. So Srila Prabhupada took that knowledge from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that was expressed in very high thoughts and a difficult language and made it accessible for us, for his audience. So we can repeat what we've heard from him and it will have effect. But we should repeat it as it is, with faith. You know, not just, yeah, with faith. If we have faith and we repeat what we've heard, it will influence the hearts of the audience. Because the beginning is faith, ado shraddha. So if you have faith, you can give faith to others. Faith means bhakti, it's just the beginning stage of bhakti. So if you can give faith to others, that means you can give bhakti to others. And then if they water the seed by chanting and hearing and are vigilant and pull out the weeds and you know, keep the creeper fenced in so, you know, they stay in the circle of pure devotees and don't allow Vaishnava Aparad to enter, they will develop. They will develop. Of course, the more mature a devotee is in devotional service, in other words, Srila Prabhupada gave the example of an unripe mango and a ripe mango. They're both mangoes. So similarly, a pure devotee, he can be in the beginning stage or in the intermediate stage or in the advanced stage, but he's still a pure devotee if he has faith in pure devotional service. And so Srila Prabhupada said, you know, a ripe mango and an unripe mango both are mangoes. So similarly, a mature devotee and an immature devotee both can be pure devotees. So that's what we're talking about, being a pure devotee. But obviously, a ripe mango is juicier and sweeter. And so, hearing from a more mature devotee, but again, if you repeat, that's the whole thing, if you repeat in the mood of service and submission, the mercy of the pure devotee comes through you to your audience. And that brings me back to where I started with Sridhar Swami. So when Sridhar Swami revealed his commentary, people were confused. They just were not sure because it was so different from everything they'd heard before. It was really in the mood of devotion. Ras, rasika. The Bhagavatam is meant for rasika. And so they placed, they had the pujaris at the temple of Vishwanath in Kashi place the commentary before the deity. And they wanted to get some answer from Vishwanath, Lord Shiva. Is the commentary correct? And then they heard, they got the answer from Lord Shiva. Aham veti, sukha veti, vyasa veti, naveti va. Part of the answer was that I, Lord Shiva, I know the true purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukhaveti, Sukadeva Goswami, he knows the true purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vyasaveti Navetiva, and Vyas, who compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, may or may not know. Now, how is it possible that Vyas, who compiled it, this what we read every day, Srimad Bhagavatam, is compiled by Vyas? How is it that he may or may not have known the purport, but we're still reading it and accepting it as an authority? Because that knowledge is not coming from him, but it is passing through him. So Lord Chaitanya quoted that verse, Amveti, Sukhaveti, Vyasaveti, Naveti Va, when he was speaking the explanation of the Atmarama verse in 61 different ways or whatever to Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami was astonished. And Lord Chaitanya replied that I do not know where these meanings are coming from. It is not in my power to think of these meanings. But I can only imagine that because you are sincere, Krishna wants this knowledge and these meanings to go to you. And he's using me as his instrument. You know, I don't know what I'm saying. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I'm just speaking like a madman. I don't know what I'm saying. And then he quoted that, you know, Am Veti Vyasa, Sukha Veti Vyasa Veti Na Veti Bhavat. But Krishna, knowing how sincere you are and being merciful upon you, is awakening these meanings in my heart and communicating them to you through me. So that is the mood of the humble servant or preacher. It's not, yes, he repeats what he's heard, but he may also say things that he's never heard in quite the same way as he's spoken them. But he doesn't take it, oh, I'm so intelligent, I'm so brilliant. But rather, this person is so sincere, and Krishna is so eager to reciprocate with this person's sincere desire and eagerness that he is making me say things for the benefit of that person that are beyond my capacity to do on my own. So in that mood, the truth that we receive from a Tattvadarshi can be passed on, even though we're not Tattvadarshis. And I would say if someone does think he's a Tattvadarshi, he's not in the proper mood to present the knowledge. You know, he should be in the mood that of a peon, that personally he may be very poor, but he's delivering something that's very valuable. That was Prabhupada's mood. In his last public lecture series at across Maidan in Bombay, he said, people say, Swamiji, Swamiji, you have done wonderful. And Prabhupada said, you know, what wonderful, I haven't done anything wonderful. If at all I've done anything to my credit, I've just repeated the message as it is. So, that's our process. And it has effect. All right, thank you all very much. Hope to see you again tomorrow morning. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.